scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all. Aguilla's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right. Happy deadline day. The trade deadline has come and gone for another year. And welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It is Friday, March 7th. And we welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Pat Steinberg with Logan Gordon on this Friday deadline. Hi, Logo.
Hi, Patrick.
Flames do nothing on trade deadline day, but don't be mistaken. Neither Wes Gilbertson nor Aaron Vickers get Friday off. No siree. We're not letting those guys get
not
the day
a chance.
Off. Wes Gilbertson's with us here in our Groundworks downtown studio. Hi, Wes.
Hey, boys.
Buddy.
It's Wes Gilbertson of Post Media.
Can I just point something out before we say our hellos to Vicks?
Yeah.
Because he's not here.
No.
In our downtown studio, and if you know anything about Vicks and the dust on that wallet, you know that he did not hear that there's free pizza in studio today. He might actually hang up now and start driving.
Atlas Pizza did provide three delicious pies for us. Vicks. Aaron Vickers of NHL.com completes our round table, our deadline round table on a Friday. Hi, Vicks.
I appreciate what Atlas Pizza has done for you guys, but you'd have to layer in a lot more beer on top of that to get me into a room with Wes Gilbertson right now.
Okay. Both are very fair. Both very fair comments, gentlemen. Hey, Vicks, why don't you start? The Flames do nothing on deadline day. And I don't think any of us are surprised by that. I think that we all four of us came into, especially once we were as close to it this week as the road trip was coming to an end. I think we came into it understanding that there's a very good opportunity or a very good chance, rather, the Flames weren't going to be extremely busy on deadline day, weren't going to be big players on deadline day. But now that they make zero trades from January 31st to March 7th, what is our reaction to no moves on deadline day 2025?
Yeah, to your point, not entirely unsurprising. And at the time, and even now, it really felt like the Farabee and Frost was the deadline deal the Flames were making. And it seems like another deal of that sort of nature is probably better reserved for the offseason than it is at the trade deadline. And in conversations with Craig Conroy, both I'm sure you've had them, we've had them, Conroy expressed content that they did get an additional 10 games out of Frost and Farabee by acting early. So a lot of the heavy lifting, as you mentioned, done January 31st. I did wonder if we'd see a depth deal sprinkled in somewhere. And we've talked a lot on Flames Talk in the past about, is there a depth defenseman coming in? Is there a right shot center that might be able to play on the fourth line? I also wondered if there would be an AHL-specific type deal to help the Wranglers out a little bit, similar to what we saw with Dryden Hunt a couple seasons ago, flipped Zahorna to the Leafs in exchange for Dryden Hunt. But all in all, I don't think any of us are going to be overly surprised that the over-under at 0.5 hit the under for Conroy at the deadline.
Yeah, this just made sense, guys. And we've talked about it on Flames Talk. We've, you know, talked about it at length. I don't think Craig Conroy really had an option. I mean, if you send out the pending UFAs, you know, if you decide you're going to subtract from a team that is right now sitting in a playoff spot, it's sort of a slap in the face to your group. And we'd be sitting here today debating, well, what does this say to Nazem Kadri? And what does it say to whomever that, oh, geez, we couldn't resist that fourth or fifth round pick for Joel Hanley or whatever it might be. And if Craig Conroy went the other way and mortgaged the future in any way today, we'd be sitting here thinking, has he lost his mind? You know, is he maybe lost touch with reality? Does he think this team is closer than they actually are? And so I think he was kind of backed in a way to what happened today. You know, I wasn't really expecting anything. And then this morning, we knew that they were going to inquire about depth on defense and maybe a right shot center. But this morning, as soon as I heard that Luke Shen went for two picks, I just thought, no way. A second and a fourth for Shen, the way that, what that told me about the cost of adding depth, I just thought, you know what? And don't get me wrong, Luke Shen's a very useful player. But at that point, I probably could have closed my laptop figuring that the Flames weren't going to do any deals today. It just, quite frankly, it didn't make sense.
Yeah, I'll echo what both Vickers and Wes said there, and the fact that I think it stays true to everything that Craig Conroy's talked about really since day one of becoming this team's general manager, that this just isn't the point in time for this team to add. And when you see what fringe pieces are all of a sudden costing teams on the open market, it makes even less sense to go down that road if you're Craig Conroy. And I think that there's a sentiment out there, Pat, that today could have been a day filled with selling for the Calgary Flames. And whether you like that or hate that idea, Craig clearly values supporting a team that has earned a playoff spot to this point in the season and wasn't going to pull the rug out from under them by doing that. And I think that the thing that bugs me the most about that sentiment that I've heard today is that this is the end of it. There's no other selling that can possibly happen. All the guys that the Flames didn't sell today, if you want to put it in that term, can still be sold in the offseason. In fact, I would say that you probably have a bigger market for those guys come the offseason, given that more teams are interested. There's more cap space flexibility to go around. So I'm not one of the people sitting here today saying, well, why didn't you sell and take advantage of everything that was happening in the market? I think Craig Conroy stuck true to everything that he's talked about.
I think the important thing to maybe keep in mind as well is that the Flames, this isn't just about, oh, well, you know, we don't want to make Nazem Kadri or Michael Backlund or Mackenzie Weegar mad. That's not why they approached the deadline the way they did. It's that they really do view this sort of bonus playoff chase that their team has put themselves in. They view it as, I think, more of an investment in what it would mean to get postseason experience for Dustin Wolf and for Connor Zary and Matt Coronato. And, you know, we all knew that there would be a segment of the fan base that if they stood pat today would be frustrated by. This is a very divided fan base. There's people want to see them go two very specific directions. And so I'm not here to slag on anyone on either side. I just think, you know, if you're sitting here saying, well, what is the Flames' plan? What are they, like, they've made a commitment to go younger and to try to supplement their core on the fly. And here's the quote unquote problem. So far it's working. Matt Coronato's playing a key role. Connor Zary's playing a key role. Dustin Wolf's a Calder candidate. These guys are as much a reason that you're in the playoff fight as some of the older guys that we talk about. And so I just think to expect Craig Conroy to abandon that on a day like today, and to your point, Logo, those conversations can certainly still happen in the summer. I think it was unrealistic to think we'd be having any other conversation.
Mm-hmm. Vix, anything you want to add there?
Well, just to jump on Wes, like, the prices were crazy. Tanev, Shen, you look what the Leafs paid for Carlo, the Avalanche for Nelson, the Capitals even for Beauvillier. Like, the market was set early, and it wasn't a market the Flames should be jumping in. And if I were in the chair, in Conroy's chair, I would have been tempted to test the market on a couple of my guys. But that said, I do think it would be problematic if you don't make a move and it gets out that you were shopping some of your veterans. But to further that point, I do think that it would have been deferring from the plan. And what this says from my perspective is Conroy committed to the group after a 62-game sample that has the Flames in a playoff spot and rewarded them accordingly. And I think that goes a long way. But now it's also on that regroup to reward Conroy for the faith that he's shown the collective.
Yeah, it's one of those days where, like, it really does feel like a super unsurprising outcome, just the way things were trending. And, you know, and I maybe we can pick up on this because, Wes, you brought up the reconvene in the offseason. I think that's really important because I don't think that just because they didn't make some quote unquote selling moves at the deadline doesn't mean that they're not willing to reevaluate where things are in the summertime. And so moving away and moving on from veterans and continuing to get younger, that isn't a this season only thing. And this year they're ahead of everybody's schedule. They're ahead of the external schedule. And internally, we all know that this has been a surprise as well. Craig Conroy and company didn't expect them to be 62 games in and in a playoff spot going down the stretch. And if they make it or don't make it, they already have exceeded expectations. But that doesn't change the overall plan of wanting to get younger and the overall plan of wanting to build for something more 3-4 years down the road. And so just because they didn't make any moves this spring doesn't preclude them from continuing to make significant shifts for the big picture in the summertime.
Yeah, I would argue that Craig Conroy's done his best work in the summertime, and especially when it comes to selling off assets, whether it was Toffoli or Jacob Markstrom or Andrew Mangiapane. He's done well in those summer trades when you're talking to everybody, when salary cap space is less of a concern because it doesn't have to be there at midnight or whatever. And so, yeah, you can circle back and you can also get a better gauge of where you're at. And that's not just the guys on the active roster now, but, you know, one of the things I found fascinating when my colleague Danny Austin and I were chatting with Craig Conroy shortly after the deadline, you know, we were talking big picture, and one of the things he said, the first name he mentioned was Zane Parekh. When he talked about growing the team, he said, you know, we'll get Zane Parekh in the lineup. He didn't put a timeline on that, but the fact that that's the first guy you're referring to, maybe, hey, we all know one of the quote-unquote elephants in the room is Rasmus Anderson's future. Has Zane Parekh's rocket ship ascent changed your approach to that? How is your initial conversations with Rasmus Anderson on an extension going to change your approach? There's a lot that can happen in the summer, guys. This isn't a finality by any stretch today. It's just this is a day more mistakes get made than anything, and I think Craig Conroy avoided those because he simply just didn't do anything.
Well, and you think about that, I think that's a great point to bring up, Wes, in the sense of one team is going to feel good about their deadline when this is all done, and whenever the playoffs in July now or something, by the time it's all over, one team's going to feel good about it. And I'm sure you can probably squint and say a few other teams would be happy with getting to a third round, like a Winnipeg or, you know, somebody that hasn't maybe reached that status before. But for the most part, if you're Toronto, if you're Tampa Bay, if you're Florida, and this doesn't resolve in another long playoff run or a Stanley Cup at a minimum, Colorado, and all of that too, it winds up being a disappointment. So, yes, maybe he didn't get all the heavy work done for the future Vix today, but he also didn't hurt himself in any way, shape, or form, in my mind.
Well, yeah, we all know the famous line from Brian Burke that when he said GMs make their biggest mistakes at 2 points of the season, the deadline and free agency. Now, I don't necessarily think Craig Conroy was going to make a big splash and be a buyer and then get buyer's remorse if the Flames didn't make the playoffs or win a round. But the way that the Flames are set up when the contracts that they do have, it sets up for summer moves, as you guys have mentioned. The cap goes up, more teams you can talk to and wheel and deal with. In theory, that could lead to higher returns, as silly as they were at the trade deadline. And all things considered, Conroy can afford to be patient because when he does have some time to work on things, we've seen the returns be very beneficial for the Flames. And you talk about, okay, well, why didn't they sell off player X or player Y for futures at the deadline? Well, let's just take a quick look at what the Flames have incorporated over the last two seasons in terms of youth, with Zary and Pospisil last season, Coronado and Wolf this season, Parekh and potentially another one or two next season. And then take into consideration Frost and Farabee are also in their mid-20s. So it's not as though this is a deadline and this was your only option to sell off all your future, all your players for futures. And there will never, ever again in the history of time be an opportunity down the road to reevaluate some of the veterans that you have. And then on top of this, just to layer it in a little bit more, you do get the group benefit of having your young players play meaningful hockey down the stretch. That you, whenever, when we hear there's two pockets of Flames fans, there's one that want to burn it to the ground and one that'll be a little bit more patient. Reinforcing that burn it to the ground mentality, the sell off, the full on rebuild Buffalo Sabres style. They haven't played a lot of meaningful hockey in the last decade, and I think it's really affected the development of some of the kids and the prospects in their organization that are now in the NHL. So when you get to a point where you're at with the Flames, where 62 games in, you're still competing for the playoffs, and your young players, your young core players are getting the benefit of playing meaningful hockey, which is going to be right through to April, I don't think that point should be undersold at all either.
I wonder too, and Wes, you first brought it up, and whether any of us or any of you listening to this disagree with it, the value that the organization puts on playing meaningful games down the stretch and potentially into the playoffs is non-negotiable, right? And that's something that they probably didn't expect to get an opportunity to have this year. So if they don't lose anything by going into the playoffs and they feel like there's something to be gained by that, then it makes sense for them to keep it on track. And even to bring it to a more specific point, Wes, the Rasmus Anderson conversation, he's a name that would have been brought up by a lot of people about potentially selling him at the deadline when you look at what right-handed defensemen went for. I'm not moving Rasmus Anderson until I get a sense of what that number is this summer. They haven't even had a chance to do that yet. Until they talk to Claude Lemieux and Rasmus Anderson's camp and get a real feel for what this looks like, it would be hard for me if I'm Craig Connor. Again, Godfather deal, something I absolutely can't say no to, is always the exception. But until I know what that number is, I'd have a hard time making that deal today too.
Yeah, and you're right, Logo. They do put a lot of value on the potential of exposing these guys to playoff games. And I just can't stress enough that the team put themselves here. Like, we're not talking about standing pat on deadline day and you're 9 points out, right? We're not talking about chasing waterfalls, to quote Vixie's iPod shuffle. Like, we're...
How dare you?
Nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong with TLC.
Yeah,
nothing
wrong. It's a banger.
We're talking about a team that has, whether you like it or not, they put themselves in the wild card fight against a bunch of other teams that...
On the back of some youngsters.
Yeah. And
the main one's 32, but the other guys have had a say in that.
Yeah. And they're up against a bunch of other teams that have their own faults or their own flaws. The one thing, guys, I want to point out, because I'm sure you've maybe touched on this already, but in the reading between the lines department, one of the more interesting things for me today was Craig Conroy saying that he wasn't willing to do a 2-year retention deal. And that tells me sort of what Craig Conroy has in the back of his mind for this summer. And that's not to go into next year being a team that's got $17 million in cap space. He knows he has to pay some significant RFAs in Ball and Coronado and Frost and Zary. You know, he's willing to get out there in free agency and take some cuts. Like, when I hear, oh, we wouldn't retain for a second year, I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is not a, hey, how many guys can we fire out the door in the summer? Now, the option's open, but what I hear there is that, you know, he wants to see if he can put this thing into a different gear.
And, you know, nothing wrong with chasing waterfalls. And also, I'm sitting here working with no scrubs. So I think you guys are all really... really good.
That's very nice
beings.
Of you. That's very nice
are.
Of you.
That's not what you say off mic. I don't know why he's saying it now.
Don't expose me. Logan Gordon, Wes Gilbertson, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, little deadline day roundtable. Okay, don't have a lot of time, but Logo, you go first. So Flames don't do anything. Canucks really only made the one deal. Soucie moved out for a third. What else? The Blues don't do anything. Utah. Well,
they did something. It was surgery on Colton Parayko's knee.
And Utah brings in Shea Weber, which 10 years ago would have been amazing, but today
great slapper.
Well, one of the best ever. Essentially, all four teams fighting for this final wild card spot stood pat at the deadline. So how do we feel about this playoff race down the stretch now that we know the Flames did nothing and really neither of the teams around them?
I got to be honest, guys. I think it's Calgary's to lose based on that road trip and how they played some of the tough teams down the stretch here. I'm not sold on Vancouver. The Pettersson thing, he started to say some of the right things, but that's too little too late there for me. They've moved out a lot of talent there, and I don't think Thatcher Demko's coming down the aisle anytime soon to save that season. St. Louis, I like a heck of a lot less with Colton Parayko out for the remainder of the regular season, and maybe not this year, but next year and the next 2 years, I think you're really going to watch out for Utah as some of those young guys figure it out. I think they still have a chance to make some noise, but I really think this is Calgary's race to lose right now as we look at exactly 20 games to go, Wes.
Just when I thought there couldn't be more drama in Vancouver, Patrick Alvin takes a swipe at Brock Besser and his extension request. Like, did I miss that?
Oh, yeah, it's...
Was that today?
Yeah.
In his post-deadline news?
Yeah, he said, I have it up in front of me. He told reporters today, if I told you what I offered or what I was offered for Brock Besser, I think I would have... I'm not even reading properly. Basically said he wasn't offered very much for Brock Besser. So I'm sorry I said extension demands. Basically said there wasn't a lot of
interest there.
A lot of trade value there. The drama just continues there. I still look at them and think I don't want to count out any team, especially with Quinn Hughes. We don't know exactly how healthy he's going to be and when. But, Logo, I don't think you're wrong to say that the Flames are probably the betting favorites right now in this wild card race.
From my perspective, I've got to believe that St. Louis is going to fall out with Parayko. I'm surprised they kept Braden Schenn around unless there was a deal somewhere today that I missed. The Vancouver Canucks, it seems like this is the season of missed opportunity, if you will, and they trade probably their second best player in JT Miller earlier in the season. That still hasn't sparked Pettersson. Utah Hockey Club, I'm a big believer in them, in their coaching staff, in the young core that they've got there, being able to take the next step. So from my perspective, I think I'd have the Flames and Utah as the two main competitors battling it out for that second wild card spot, from my perspective.
It all kind of comes down to two things for me. It's still the Canucks have the best points percentage of the four teams by 0.01. But still, if it were to end a day on that metric, they'd be in and the other three would be out. But when you've got Quinn Hughes and... just even when we talked to Kevin Woodley on Thursday, if they get Thatcher Demko back and it's the Demko that they had prior to this injury, Demko, Lankin, and the way they're playing, I still think Vancouver's the biggest threat and the biggest hurdle in this mix. And I think the Flames are going to stay in it right till the end. And with the way Dustin Wolf has played for them, and to a lesser extent, even what they've gotten recently from Dan Vladar, I think they're going to have the goaltending to be able to stay in this thing. But of the other three teams, it's... I like Utah a lot, and I think that they are close, but because they didn't trade Besser, that's kind of the swing point to me to keep it as Vancouver is the team that worries me the most from a Flame standpoint. I think we should probably shoop our way out.
Well done.
And that's probably enough for us today. Good stuff. Check out Wes Gilbertson and the trade deadline recaps and more over wherever you get your post-media content. Aaron Vickers at AA Vickers and on NHL.com. Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Logan Gordon at Fan960 Logan. My name is Pat Steinberg. Boys, good little deadline roundtable. I like that. Be well, boys, and we'll be back to normal with the deadline behind us on Monday.
Can't wait.
See you both at the Dome.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
Hey, Wes, can you just swing by the house and drop off that pizza?
Yeah, no problem, buddy. I still have your Tupperware from last time.
Thanks. You're a great guy.
Thanks, boys. That's Aaron Vickers. That's Wes Gilbertson. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg. Our trade deadline coverage all day on Sportsnet 960 The Fan and here on Flames Talk has been brought to you by our four great sponsors, including All Kind Door Services Limited, your go-to service company for the last 38 years, offering 24-hour emergency service for all your door repairs. Anything that swings, slides, or rolls, visit allkinddoorservices.com.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Wrapping up this deadline day hour of Flames Talk with our Daily Flames Roundtable. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport, it is deadline day 2025. The deadline has come and gone. The Flames do not make any trades on deadline day 2025. It's Pat Steinberg, Logan Gordon, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable to wrap up the week. So, gents, this is the group. The group on Friday, March 7th is the exact same group that it was on Thursday, March 6th. In a 3-2 overtime loss to the Dallas Stars. So, 62 down, 20 to go, and the stretch drive is underway for the Flames. There will be no subtractions, nor will there be any additions to this roster down the stretch as they try to make their way back into the Stanley Cup playoffs. As such, gents, knowing the Flames did not make any moves on deadline day, how are we feeling about the group as the stretch drive begins or has already begun?
I feel pretty good as long as they stay healthy. This is the group that got them to where they are, which is sitting in a Stanley Cup playoff spot with 62 games down and 20 games to go. So I think leaving the group intact is good again, as long as they stay healthy. Not a lot of depth at center. You worry a little bit about, or at least I worry a little bit about depth on defense. If you were to lose certainly one of your top three or four guys, but now, this was a pretty expensive trade deadline. I mean, I don't think that the prices were reasonable enough for Craig Conroy to add at either one of those positions. Centers are a premium. Defensemen are a premium approaching and at the deadline. So with the prices that were paid for some good players today, I understand why the Flames general manager didn't buy. And I also understand why he didn't sell, because I know there are a lot of people out there that wanted the Flames to move on from some of their top players, guys like Nazem Kadri and Blake Coleman and Rasmus Anderson. But I'm not sure this is the time to do that if you are going to do that. And even moving on from some more complementary players like Joel Hanley or Dan Vladar, I just don't think you'd get enough value and be able to justify that to a team that has battled for 62 games to put themselves in a position to get to the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I feel good about the group. If they can stay healthy, or at least relatively healthy, especially with their top players between now and the end of the regular season, then I think it's going to be a fight to the finish for them.
Yeah, I think you have to be at least optimistic about this group heading down the stretch. 62 games into the season, and they've put themselves in a Stanley Cup playoff spot. We sort of talked throughout the day and probably over the last couple of weeks, guys, about the teams around the Flames, and not to discredit anything that the Flames have done, because I think they've earned their way to where they are, but I at least look at the teams around them, and I'm not struck with a lot of confidence in the teams around them to suddenly pull away completely from the Calgary Flames down the stretch here. Now they play a key game against the Vancouver Canucks at home next week, which could go a long way to seeing how this whole thing shakes out down the stretch. But on top of what the team has done, I think that there's something to be said about the group around them sort of thinning out a bit. They weren't very active on a Friday trade deadline either. So 62 games in on this season, Pat, I think you can be pretty confident at this point that the Flames aren't going to go out quietly, because that's just hasn't been their MO three quarters of the way through the season.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I take a look at the roster and I kind of think that what we've seen from them over the last couple of months is probably what we're going to see from them down the stretch, in that they're going to be competitive. They're rarely going to be in games where they're not in it. I mean, we have seen, I don't know, like four or five games this year where you can truly say the Flames didn't have much of a chance. Like even on this road trip, which we'll get to in a little bit, I look back on it and I thought their two worst games, or the games where they were outplayed the most and were clearly second best, were those back-to-back games on Saturday, Sunday. And, you know, in the Florida game, where I thought they were the second best team on the ice for almost 60 straight minutes, They still were right in it until the final minute of the second period. It was only 1-0, and it only ends up being 3-0. And then I thought Dustin Wolf was spectacular after an incredible Dan Vladar performance on Saturday. I thought Dustin Wolf lived up to his end of the bargain, and he was spectacular in Carolina. And I thought the Hurricanes controlled that entire game for the most part. And the Flames got a point out of it and could have gotten two. And so even on nights where they're not at their best and they're giving you like a C or C minus effort or whatever, they still have more often than not been able to find ways to keep games close and at the very least give themselves a chance when it's all said and done. So they're a 500 team in the calendar year of 2025 with the overtime loss against Dallas. Flames are 11-11-3 in the 25 games they've played in the calendar year of 2025. So the record-wise, you're probably going to have to be better than that if you're going to make it. However, I do think in those 25 games, they have been competitive and in it, and obviously their lack of scoring has done them in a lot of those losses. But I kind of feel this is the group. This is the group that has gotten them to being in a playoff spot at the trade deadline. And I kind of think the brand of hockey that has gotten them to that through 62, yeah, I feel like that's what we're going to get from them in the final 20 games this season. And whether that gets them in or not, Wilsey, we'll find out, and we'll see where the chips fall.
Yeah, they've been a pretty consistent group. You know, they work hard. They almost always get good goaltending. They're generally good defensively. I mean, one thing we've talked a lot about is their struggle to score, and that hasn't changed. It was great to see them get 4 in the first period and 6 in the game against the Flyers in the second to last game of the road trip. But, you know, they got 2 against the Stars in Dallas last night and needed one more, as it turned out. But, you know, they're playing some pretty good hockey. And, you know, I know the Flames didn't make a deal on deadline day, but it's not like they didn't improve their team. And, guys, with the prices that were paid today, I've got to think that acquiring Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost would have cost the Flames a lot more today than Andrei Kuzmenko, Jake Capalchier, and second and seventh round picks. I think the prices went up. So I think Craig Conroy did a great job kind of getting ahead of it, adding to his forward group. And one thing that excites me about the Flames is that I feel better about the team now that we have some games under our belt coming out of the Four Nations break than I did before the break. And it has nothing to do with the fact that they were tired, because I think a lot of teams were tired and needed a break between games. Just some guys have started playing better. And the two guys I just mentioned that came over from the Flyers would be right near the top of the list for me. You know, Frost has been coming on. I think Farabee's had a couple of really good games in a row, so that's been great to see. Aaron Govich had one really good game, and then I would say not such a good game last night. But, you know, some of the guys who they needed to be better have been better. And even Rasmus Anderson, who's one of their two best defensemen, there's no doubt about that. I thought he was kind of struggling, but I really liked his game against the Stars last night. So I think the Flames are in a pretty good spot. The thing is, they've got way more competition than I thought they would have, guys. It looked like it was going to be a two-horse race between the Flames and the Canucks, and now all of a sudden you've got 4, maybe even 5 teams, if you want to include the Ducks, fighting for that second wild card spot. And I was looking at Tankathon today, and of those 5 teams, if you do want to include the Ducks, the Blues have the easiest schedule. Actually, they've got the easiest schedule in the league from now until the end of the regular season based on opponent point percentage. The Utah Hockey Club would have the second easiest schedule with the teams that we're talking about here. The Flames would have the third easiest schedule. And then the Ducks, the fourth easiest schedule. The most difficult schedule, at least on paper, is the Canucks. Now, they do have a game in hand. The Ducks and the Canucks have a game in hand, or 2 games in hand, on the rest of the teams we're talking about here. But the Canucks, based on what I'm watching or seeing on Tankathon, have the 6th hardest schedule in the NHL from now until the end of the regular season. Logan, you talked about that proverbial 4-pointer coming up next Wednesday. That's going to be absolutely huge. But, you know, the Flames are in a position to protect the playoff spot, which I don't think many or any people thought they would be on March the 7th.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday deadline day edition of Flames Talk. It's Derek Wills, Logan Gordon, Pat Steinberg along with you. So the trip ends kind of, it kind of just went according to plan. You're like, yeah, there probably won't be any further in or out when it's all said and done. If everything goes according to the script like normal, this did not turn into a break trip for the Flames. They did not go 1-5 and fall way out of the playoffs. They didn't get 11 of 12 points and earn a giant cushion. They're about in the exact same spot coming out of this six-game trip as they were going into the six-game trip. So, guys, they go 2-2-2 on that season-long six-game road trip. How do we look back? What's our overall feel on that trip?
Well, I said before the trip that, for me, a successful road trip would be 6 out of a possible 12 points, and that is exactly what they got. And they probably should have got 7 because, you know, they had a 2-0 lead in Dallas last night and they hit 3 goal posts in overtime and wound up only getting a point instead of 2 points out of that game against the Stars, who, hey, they've been one of the best teams in the league, one of the best home teams in the league. They've got a bunch of guys who are on absolute heaters right now and didn't love the game tying goal and didn't love the game winning goal. Probably like the game-winning goal more than the game-tying goal, if we're being completely honest here. But, you know, an elite goal scorer in Jason Robertson did beat Dan Vladar with those two shots. But, you know, they're in a good spot. And if you would have told me before the road trip that with the Flames playing against not only 5 playoff teams, but 4 of the last 7 Stanley Cup champions in the first 3 games of the trip versus the Capitals, the Lightning, and the Panthers, and then 2 other perennial Stanley Cup contenders in the Hurricanes and the Stars, and that they would be in a better spot coming home than they were going on the road, I would have absolutely signed up for that. And yeah, they played 1 really bad game on the trip against the Panthers. Obviously didn't love them against the Hurricanes, but sometimes you're not going to be at your best and you got to find ways to pick up points. And they did that in that game. And I thought they played a really good game against the Stars to wrap up the trip, despite it being, you know, game 6 and day 12 or day 11, with today being a travel day and day 12 of the trip. But, you know, they're a team that just keeps fighting. And that's what I love about this group of players. So, I feel good about the trip because they accomplished what I said they needed to accomplish, and that's good 6 of a possible 12 points. And now we'll see if they can take care of business during this 3-game homestand.
Yeah, I think it was a mixed bag for me, guys. I do think there was a lot of good things. That win against Washington's a signature one that I think this team should be really proud of against one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. And I think they finished out strong after a really tough stretch, but I think I'm still reminded that it was a tough stretch for this team, and some of those offensive struggles that we know exist with this team kind of reared their ugly head in a couple of those ones. And I'll give it to you that they faced some good goaltenders, they faced some good defensive teams in there, but it is still a worry for me at some point, as the hockey's only going to get harder from this point on and down the stretch, that might be something that jumps up against this team as they get down the stretch. But I think the Philly game was probably a weight off of their shoulders in a lot of ways to finally see a couple pucks go in the net. I know it's probably not going to be a banner night for Sam Erson when he looks back on it, but you need those. You need those nights when you're an NHLer, Pat, and especially for a team that, as we've talked about, struggles to get to 4 goals. To have 4 in a period must have felt like heaven on earth for these guys. You know, it's been such hard work to get the puck in the net. It's nice to get some of those bounces. So, they did kind of wind up where we thought they would be. We knew they weren't going to walk through this road trip and just let the other teams walk all over them, because that's not who they've been this entire season. But there are a couple of moments that I think gave me pause, and ones that I'm going to watch as we head down the last 20 games.
I mean, the fact that they on this trip moved into last overall in goals for is a little concerning. I won't lie. And you know, the thing that Logan said is maybe the thing that is the most concerning. And by that, I mean the fact that this is the time when things get more difficult in this league. And as things got more difficult, it became that much harder for the Flames to score. And so That's a little concerning to me, is because now this is the most difficult part of the regular season, and those scoring woes have really reared their ugly head. I mean, outside of the Philadelphia game, it was a low-scoring trip, and, you know, they had the one game where they did score enough to win in Washington, but, you know, the four losses on the trip were all nights where they didn't score enough, and that one extra goal would have done, like, that power play late in the second period on Thursday night against Dallas, or obviously Florida was, you completely write that one off, but, you know, power play opportunities against Tampa Bay. And I guess that's my biggest concern coming out of the trip, is that they lose 4 of 6, and in all 4 of them, it was their lack of offense that was the main culprit as to why they lost. In saying that, I grant you all the other stuff, like the tough opponents and a lot of travel, a lot of games in a short period of time. And the positive, the building blocks are there too. Good goaltending, right? Good penalty kill. Hard work was pretty much non-negotiable outside of the Florida disaster. So I think there are still things to build on. I said 3-2-1's a good trip, so they fall just short of that. But I mean, I thought it was respectable. I thought that they worked hard generally the entire trip, and there were some troubling trends for sure, but there's also, I think, some things they can build on, starting with their goaltending and continuing with their identity, that they can now come back home for Saturday against Montreal and come back home for the final 20 games and build on those things, or try to build on those things, as they try to push for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, the only game I hated on the trip was the game against the Panthers. 3-0, in my opinion, was a flattering final score for the Flames. But in the game before, they lost 3-0 to the Lightning. And I think you could argue that they deserved to pick up at least a point, if not 2, out of that hockey game. They just didn't have any puck luck and, to your point, couldn't finish. It is crazy, though. They score a season-high 6 goals in that game against the Flyers, and then they score 6 goals in the other 5 games on the road trip, which is, I suppose, an alarming stat. But on the flip side, this is a team that hangs around in almost every game. And despite not playing well against the Panthers, it was still just a 3-0 game. And I get that a loss is a loss, but these guys just continue to battle. And for me, another positive coming off of that road trip, guys, the penalty kill. Because it's been a huge Achilles heel for this team almost all season long. And they gave up a power play goal in the first 2 games of the trip. But I'll put an asterisk beside those 2. The first goal was against the Capitals. Alexander Ovechkin, who scored more power play goals than any player in NHL history, was the guy who scored that and did so from his office. So I'll give them a pass on that one. And then in game 2 of the trip against the Lightning, Nikita Kucherov, who's one of the best players on the planet, banks one in off of Mackenzie Weegar's skate. I don't think it was even a shot. I think it was intended to be a cross-crease pass. So I'll give them a pass on that one. But the Flames finished the road trip by going 15 for 15 on the penalty kill. And I know that Trent Call has worked really hard, and the players have as well, to get that penalty kill turned around. So for me, I'll be on an island by myself as glass half full guy. 6 of 12 points against those 6 teams. Again, 5 perennial Stanley Cup contenders and a pretty good Flyers team, and a penalty kill that's kind of turned the corner here, at least for the time being. I think there were a lot of positives on that trip for me, fellas.
No, I'm with you. I think we're with you. There were lots of positives and lots of building blocks to come out of it. That's why I say kind of a mixed bag when it's all said and done. And now 20 games to go as they roll into what might feel like a 7th game of a 6-game road trip on Saturday against Montreal, because not a lot of time to rest. And not even a full 48 hours between puck drops. 6 o'clock on Thursday, 5 o'clock on Saturday. We'll see what the legs are like for the Flames against Montreal on Saturday night. For now, we'll wrap up our Daily Flames Roundtable. Wilsey, we'll see you on Saturday morning at the Dome.
Sounds good. Quickly before I go, guys, I will say this, and I talked to a bunch of coaches and players and staff about it. The team staying overnight in Washington and then in Philadelphia and then in Dallas, I think it made a huge difference. You know, I can only speak from my own experience and from what I heard from other guys as well, but at the end of a 6-game, 12-day road trip, I would normally be exhausted. Even a 3-game, 6-day road trip, I'd be tired. I'm not. And I think a lot of the guys felt the same way. So fingers crossed that their gas tanks are full for tomorrow's game against the Canadiens. Should be a good one.
See you on Saturday.
Okay, bye.
He is Derek Wills. He is Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Logan Gordon, who, Fun deadline day. That was good.
That was great. It's great to be with you.
Logan Gordon's on Twitter at Fan960Logan. Our outstanding producers for deadline day, Shan Virgie, Cam Hughes. Thank you for your outstanding work as always, boys. Always that much more going on a day like deadline day. And that will start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. This hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.